Welcome to Five Star Radio. Consider this your warning.
Hey there, Caskin. Welcome to Five Star Radio here, halfguarded.com. And we're doing a walkabout edition of the program well in advance. That's our ways these days. He says, because he has to rhyme stuff. What, I don't know, whatever. I apologize in advance to anybody that listened to the last Five Star Radio that was in studio. Had some issues with the microphone that I was not aware of until afterwards. It's not like I have a real microphone in a real studio. I'm sitting on a fucking couch with a dog watching soccer and yelling at it, as opposed to walking dogs with the Apple earbuds, which actually I think do a pretty good job, all things considered. In the winter, they're shit because they hit, you know, zippers and all that. But for the purposes of doing a little 20-25 minute show, as you know how these walkabout editions are, I think that they do the job just fine. Boy, these dogs hit. I'm always amazed at a dog's ability to piss, the accuracy with which a dog pisses. So as we walk about, I want to talk about rhyming. And no, I know we have obviously comic conversations here at halfguarded.com, and those three do a fantastic, fantastic job. They really are good. Somebody's window's got a notice of inspection. But I also like comics, and I want to talk a little bit about comics. More specific comic book movies. I saw Ant-Man. I threw up the review. It's there. A lot of people probably didn't see it because there's a lot of news. I'm always all concerned. I gotta have content. Gotta get something done. And there's always more than I realize. And it was good. It was fine. It was a little different. It would have been a lot different if it had been Edgar Wright. But who knows? I mean, maybe it wouldn't have fit in with the larger tapestry of Marvel. And I wouldn't have minded a standalone Ant-Man film, but realistically, one, they're putting a lot of money into it. And also, the kind of the justification for doing a standalone Ant-Man film is that it does fit into the larger tapestry. Somebody had a word of the day, didn't they? Well, if it's not connected, you know, but they could have, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what would have been so big in Edgar Wright's version of the film that it would have just made it incompatible. On the other hand, Marvel is, I think it's fair to say that the most successful movie studio in the world. Creative movie people or whatever. I don't know. It's so neat, really, to see what Marvel's doing with movies. Because it's exactly what they did with comics in the 60s and the 70s. As far as Stan Lee and just all the true interconnectedness that you see with all the characters. That really was not something that happened in DC. DC tended, you know, every character had their own city. Batman had Gotham, Superman had Metropolis, Keystone City, and you know, so on and so forth. I actually don't know what Wonder Woman city was. She's in London now. Oh, I mean, she had the island, so you go with that. But again, like, every character was kind of like in their own little world. And while technically they all existed on the same planet, let's not get run over by a car, dogs. While they all technically existed on the same planet, and they would interact here and there, obviously you had the Justice League eventually and shit like that. Stan Lee, that, you know, had all the heroes, basically everybody be in New York, and only New York, which has its own limitations. And the good thing the Marvel movies have done is actually branched out a little bit from that. You know, Tony Stark more or less is West Coast, same with Ant-Man. Captain America, he's Brooklyn. But still, and he would have the characters kind of cross over or reference each other, and Human Torch and Spider-Man were friends and things of that nature. It just made everything feel real. Like, you weren't just reading one comic. it gave you an incentive to read all the comics. Because, like I say, Human Torch and Spider-Man were friends. So in theory, if something happens to Spider-Man, that would impact the Fantastic Four comic. If Spider-Man dies, oh my gosh, it's not just going to be Spider-Man, you know, Mary Jane, Gwen Stacy, and Aunt May that are sad. It would be the Fantastic Four and his best buddy, the Human Torch. It would be all the other guys he knew. And they all, you know, every hero kind of was familiar with each other. And they're all in each other's worlds. And they'd have crossovers, but they were organic crossovers. You know, Stan Lee was doing events before anybody did events. Just, he just called them, you know, issues, team-ups. And the Marvel Universe, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is doing the exact same thing. All these stories stand on their own. They're all independent of one another. And yet they all fit together in part of a larger world. And yes, they all lead up to Avengers movies and things like that. But realistically, and I think this is going to be the problem, the part where they've just completed phase, I'll say two, I think it is. I think phase three is the phase, that, as they say, that will lead up to the next Avengers film or something like that. I'm not exactly sure. Like, the first movies were great because the interconnectedness was there, but it wasn't overwhelming. It was just a credit scene here or a little bit there and something like that. You know, it was just Tony Stark showing up at the very end or somebody mentioning Stark Technologies. Almost Easter egg-like. But nothing ever really interfered with an overall plot. And some of that was by design. After a while, it was clearly by design. I think the first film that I would say probably really, really did it was the first Captain America film, because they called it the first Avengers, a fucking prequel. By design, it was a prequel. And obviously, everything leading up to Age Ultron, I mean, the good is the movies all dealt with the fallout from the Avengers film. And I wrote about how I'm looking forward to Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, because it deals with the fallout from Man of Steel, therefore giving the Man of Steel more importance. And, you know, it adds to a movie without redoing a movie. I like that. But now that Marvel has got this overall plot, you're kind of aware that you're watching part of something bigger. And Ant-Man had that for sure. Just a little bit, you know. But again, the way that they did it with Ant-Man, I think it added to the story, because it felt natural. He had to infiltrate part of the Avengers facility, Avengers headquarters, and get some special device thingy that Hank Pym needed. That was it. And he fought the Falcon for a little bit, and it was kind of neat, and it was funny. They didn't use a big Avenger until the very, 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 very end post-credits. And so, like, if you'd never seen the other movies, you wouldn't have needed to. But if you have seen them, it feels like it's part of that world without being too caught up in that world. Because the truth is, like, you know, if you have all these superhero movies, they should know it. There should be some sort of reference to this shit. So again, like, I don't know what, I think again is a tick for me, what it is that Edgar Wright was doing that would have made it incompatible with that. And it could just be a general tone. I don't know. All I know is that Marvel has their formula, and it works. Works better than anybody else in the world. This is now 12 straight films they've had, 12, that have opened up at number one. It did like $60 million, which is not like last year when Guardians of the Galaxy did like 90 or whatever. And everybody's like, what the fuck? And I've been joking that Marvel's ability to just do whatever they want, whenever they want, is always going to be, well, hey, Guardians of the Galaxy. And every studio executive would be like, yeah, fuck, fine. You made that one work. And now they got Ant-Man. We made Ant-Man into a pretty decent-sized, you know, film. It'll, you know, make money. Fucking Ant-Man. And, of course, every other studio is trying to mimic this. Warner Brothers is doing it basically backwards. They're going to have Batman versus Superman. It's also going to include Wonder Woman. And I think those are going to be the main three, with Easter eggs towards other people. But for all I know, fucking, you know, Aquaman's been cast, and everybody's always rumored for a Green Lantern and all this stuff, leading up to a Justice League movie eventually. Where I'm sure they'll fight, my guess is fight Apocalypse, Darkseid. Or is it Dark Seed? I don't know. It's probably Dark, probably pronounced Dark Side, because that's, you know, whatever. It's like Thor Hammer Monye. I never knew how to say the fucking word. I was like Molgener or something. Then one day somebody's like, it's Monye. I'm like, really? Huh. Both dogs are shitting at the same time. Luckily, this house is for sale. And it looks empty. So anyway, and again, it may work. Maybe what Warner Brothers will end up working. You don't have to do what Marvel did. You don't have to have small films that build towards a big one. But they seem to be doing a big film that will lead to smaller ones. Ben Affleck is rumored to be doing The Batman. And my guess is that film will be a lot. I think he may actually make the best film of any of these giant franchise things, because they just did the big Batman trilogy. Batman's been rebooted now several times. It's actually the second trilogy. Yeah, it's the first one, 4, that they've done with this character, which Spider-Man only did 3 and 2. I don't know if there's any other franchises that have ever had a trilogy of reboots, with both of the trilogies being very successful. You know, I'm not saying that Batman or Robin, and certainly Batman Forever, and certainly not Batman and Robin were great or anything like that, but Batman and Batman Returns were definitely successful movies at the time. And at the time, Batman was like the biggest movie of all time, I think. And obviously, the Batman Begins trilogy, Christopher Nolan, has just been a huge, huge hit. So, like, I don't know. I mean, you don't really see these universes get rebooted like this. So, whatever. I mean, come on. Marvel's been so successful that Sony said, fuck it, here's Spider-Man, you do it. And Marvel's willing to do it. I'm sure they're getting some sort of money, but they're not getting as much as they could if they just played the waiting game and said, fuck you, Sony. Give us a character. We'll buy him back or whatever. Like, they're almost interested in the artistic side of it, which is bullshit. It's all about money. Still, Kevin Feige, who's heading it all up, if it's working, they ain't gonna tinker with it too much. Yeah. And like I say, Warner Bros. Is trying it. And of course, in a couple weeks now, Fantastic Four comes out. The summer's guaranteed biggest piece of shit. Guaranteed biggest piece of shit of the fucking summer. There's no way I am not let down by this movie. I just fucking guarantee it. There's no way. Zero chance that this movie is good. It looks like garbage. It's so bad that they're not even releasing in 3D, and that's unheard of. And I don't even like 3D. I never see movies in 3D, although I did see Ant-Man in 3D, because it was the only time they were showing that was convenient for me. But for the most part, I'm past the 3D thing. Just let me see the movie. Very, very few movies who I think need to be in 3D. Gravity was great in 3D. And obviously Avatar and certain movies work, but the studio would not invest the money to do post-production 3D on an action film. And that's like throwing away money, because 3D movies tend to be like 50% more expensive to go to. And they just said, this movie's going to be terrible. Yeah. And Josh Trank like fired and all this shit. So it just looks bad. But Bryan Singer's back on X-Men. He's almost kind of doing the very first ever natural reboot. Like, he's figuring out a way to make everything work in continuity and still be a reboot. Kind of like Star Trek. Star Trek may surpass Batman eventually someday for reboots. Because what are they, 2 for the second go-around? Third one will likely be a success. I don't know if it'll be good. I don't think Abrams is directing it, but it should be good. Of course, the first Star Trek was like, what, 8? 7, 8, 9, something like that. Some hits and misses in there. But it's a reboot, but it's an organic, it was a good reboot. It actually made sense within, well, as much sense as you can make within continuity. It seems like Singer's pushing that with X-Men. And he's got the perfect vehicle. You know, once you introduce the time travel shit, you can reboot things and it all makes sense. As much as time travel ever makes sense. But it allows you to recast people and do new stories and things like that. So he's talking about how already he wants to play in the Fantastic Four sandbox. He wants to do a big, Fantastic Four and X-Men crossover. Because they're both owned by Fox. Or both licensed by Fox. look, Singer, everything he's done with X-Men has been very good. Whether this will be good or not, I don't know. Certainly this Fantastic Four, I know, it just seems so shitty. And Fantastic Four and X-Men aren't really characters that cross over. I mean, anybody can cross over, but even within the Marvel Universe, and maybe this just comes from decades, plural, of reading comic books. But within Marvel, it's always been pretty much like the X-Men are over here, and then you have the rest of the superheroes over there. And all the rest of the superheroes interact with each other. And they've kind of split off and introduced a little bit more lately the Inhumans, because they want to jack that shit up for a movie someday and basically let them have mutants within the Marvel Universe without it actually having them be mutants. It ain't going to work. I mean, it's not just mutants, which is a great concept. Perfect, brilliant, brilliant concept of people born with powers. And they're treated like outcasts and allegories. And the allegories go from, you know, the civil rights movement in the 1960s. And Bryan Singer is openly gay. And he sees it as an allegory for gay rights and stuff like that today. And you see the way that they talk in the movie, like, Mom, Dad, I'm a mutant. And they make it like coming out of the closet type of deal. And the powers manifest at your teen years and shit like that. It's again, a great concept that has withstood the test of time and will continue to withstand the test of time, because there's always going to be some sort of group of people that feel like outcasts. If you're in Texas and you're a liberal, you feel like an outcast. If you're in Massachusetts and you're a conservative, you feel like an outcast. There's always going to be somebody that can identify with those types. Fantastic Four, I mean, the film is just going to fuck it up so fucking bad. It's just such shit. Just such utter shit. Nobody looks like who they should. I mean, I hate to be like, oh, they don't look like it. And it's not because Johnny Storm is black, although that's part of it. And it's one of those things where it just screams, somebody said, we should have a black guy in our movie. No reason to make him black. And it really doesn't work because his fucking sister is white. Oh, they'll probably make him adopted or some shit like that. But it doesn't fit. To me, what made Fantastic Four great is you had four of them, and three of them were family. You know, brother and sister, then husband and wife, and then husband and best friend. And Ben Grimm was kind of the outsider, and it worked because he physically looked like the outsider as a thing and all this shit. Well, now Johnny Storm physically looks a little different. You know, it's two white people, a black guy, and a rock. It's not even The Rock. There's no way, by the way, that The Rock makes it to the Shazam movie. He will die of a heart attack before that. He's just going to explode. Just, his heart will explode. 5 years later, we'll know he's dead because his work ethic will keep going. He won't stop. Nonetheless, there's no way it works. But, you know, there are other characters. You can make other characters that are white. You know, most comic book characters are white because over time they've been created by white people, and you tend to just artists. You look out your window and Stanley's like, yeah, I got the idea for Spider-Man. I saw a fucking spider crawling around. I'm like, yeah, Spider-Man. What did he do? Created a little nerdy kid from Queens. Why? Because Stanley was probably a little nerdy kid that grew up, I don't know if he grew up in Queens or whatever, but you know what I mean. It's easier to write characters that you can identify with. That's why men don't write women well. We're not women. That's why women, when they write men, for as much shit as men get for not writing women very well, and that goes all the way, you know, fucking Ernest Hemingway's been criticized for his characterization of women. And I understand why, as women are not usually great characters or admirable. But in the same token, you know, female writers don't exactly do male characters as well either. I don't know how, but it seems like every time I read something, I just have this feeling when I'll see, like, somebody talk, I go, is this written by a woman? Like, I can just tell. Because it's just a different way of approaching things. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's what makes the world great. That's what art should do. Art should let people from different perspectives express themselves, and you go, huh, so that's how you view being a man, and things like that. Now, it's been an issue because over time, you know, so much of art's been dominated by men, predominantly white men like me. Which works for me. I mean, all art is generally accessible to me. But as society's growing and progressing a great deal, far more than I think people ever give it credit for. We're seeing more of these other alternative, but someday just normal as can be voices emerging, and it'll be better, create a better tapestry. Brian Michael Bendis, even though he's a Jew living in Portland, created the new Spider-Man, Miles Morales, and he's half Puerto Rican, half black, although he's pretty much just treated as black. The Puerto Rican part always felt like, and I'm just going to pretend he's also Hispanic, just because I can do it. But you know what? The character worked. I actually thought it was a great character because, and again, maybe this is because I'm a white guy, but felt like, I'm just reading the character. I'm not reading a guy who's the black Puerto Rican kid. That was part of his character, but that wasn't him exclusively. Like, when I mentioned the five-star radio I did about transgendered individuals, about how I was disappointed the one character in Sense8 was, her character is just defined by being transgendered. There's nothing else to her, really. But anyways, Fantastic Four making Johnny Storm black, it just seems like it adds another layer of complexity that didn't need to be done. There's plenty of other characters that can be black. I mean, you can just make Wolverine black. You get the right guy to play Wolverine. If it's black, it don't matter. Shit, you can almost have a woman play Wolverine if it's the right woman. I don't know who, but I don't know, maybe Lady Cyborg or some shit. It's a little too realistic, I know, but and I don't mind that I have no problem. You can make Spider-Man black. I mean, they did in the comics, but if they just made Peter Parker black, I could see it working, because there's nothing about the character, none of his relationships require him to be white. Whereas Fantastic Four, I mean, if you're going to make Johnny Storm black, you had to make Sue Storm black. Then, fine. Maybe it would still work. Then the story's fine. I just don't like the idea of having the white brother, bright white sister, black brother. Not that kind of brother. It's just, like I say, it feels... It just screams, we shoehorn this in. Like, what? Lex Luthor could be black. Fucking Superman. Superman could probably be black. I think it would be tougher for him because by nature his character has to, one, be from Kansas, which is pretty fucking white, and has grown up in a world without, you know, he grew up in an idealized world and he's an idealist. And I feel like if you were having a black character with the same attitude as Superman, I could see black people in particular, the blacks, getting upset just because it'd be like, look, this is not what a black guy would be like. He wouldn't see America in this Pollyanna way. He wouldn't see the best of it. He'd have experienced prejudice and racism and stuff like that. And Superman never did. He experienced, in many respects, the best of everything, of all that people could be. Small town, middle America and shit like that. Come here, boy. Oh, hold on a second.
Hello.
Hi. Come on, Case. But plenty of other guys. I mean, Batman could be black. Again, nothing. Zero about the character needs him to be white. Oh, it probably works a little bit. No. There's nothing about the character needs him to be white. Nothing. Batman could be black. And as long as you have the right actor, fuck it. Go for it. You want to know who the best Punisher was of all time? Denzel Washington in Man on Fire. That was the best Punisher movie I ever saw. Punisher could be black. I mean, like I say, as long as you're consistent, you just don't change things about what I call the core of the characters. And by having, apparently, one of the Fantastic Four kids be adopted or something like that, to me that changes the core of the family. The dynamics get just a little bit more strained. And I think it adds a layer that is not needed. You don't need to add that layer. And if you don't need to do it, why do it? But beyond that, the fucking movie just looks like shit. The tone is shit. The special effects don't look all that good. The acting doesn't look all that good. Nothing about this movie looks entertaining. And for them to cross over the X-Men, I mean, Fantastic Four, oh, they're going a little darker and grittier, and it looks, and it reminds you of X-Men with the colors and the tone and shit, but I want to see Fantastic Four should be set in the same world as Spider-Man, not the same world as Batman. And that's almost what it feels like with the new Fantastic Four film. It does not feel happy and fun. It feels like it's taking itself way too seriously. And I think that, you know, you can be super serious with your comic book movies, and they'll be good. And you can be serious without being, you know, Dark Knight serious. You could be Avengers or Iron Man type serious, where they treat it respectfully, but there's only this half wink like, yep, I'm a fucking grown man in a flying suit of armor, and I shoot shit, and it's fucking awesome. You know, you and the director and everybody, we all know, like, this is really cool, isn't it? Like, you just go balls out, you're fucking Joss Whedon, you say, I'm gonna have flying fucking dragons from outer space invade New York and have the Hulk do all these cool badass fight scenes. And you're watching, you're just going, this is a fanboy's wet dream. Fantastic Four, though, looks like it should be closer to the latter than the former. It should not be that Christopher Nolan-style approach. Because it's a grown man who can stretch, and a woman turns invisible, and a man made out of rock, and a guy that flies and is on fire. And there's really good, again, these characters have been around forever for a reason. Comic book characters come and go. Fans are fickle. These characters have withstood the test of time, more or less. And the reason is simple. They're good characters. I mean, they're the core of what they have to offer is solid, and it's simple. And there's so much you can do with it, you know. The woman that she's invisibility to high. Reed Richards is always stretching himself thin. I mean, they're on the nose, sure. But they're there. And it's kind of neat to see, you know, the manifestation of their personalities coming out in their powers. You don't see that most characters aren't like that. You know, Spider-Man's powers have nothing to do with his personality. Just, that'd be a really fucking weird way to manifest your personality is through swinging around like a monkey or a spider, I guess. Same with, you know, Superman's powers, I mean, whatever. Superman's powers seem like they are now because they're so boring and bland and static, but that's because, like, everybody's copying and wants to be Superman. But Fantastic Four was one of the few really big, high-profile characters over time that had these powers and everything that analogized to... Would you stop rolling around on the grass, you ass? So, like I say, it's going to be bad. And if you're, oh, Mike, you're going to watch it, and then you're going to prejudge it, and when it sucks, then you'll just... No. A lot of times when I want to see a movie and I have prejudged it as being bad, those tend to be the best movies. Or the ones I don't think about. Like the ones I get really, really, really excited for and I think this can't miss. They're the ones that let me down. Best example of two big examples, Star Wars and more important, Matrix, the second Matrix. I was so beyond excited for the second Matrix. And that same year, X-Men 2 came out. And, like, I liked X-Men a lot, but, like, I hadn't really thought about it that much because a lot of my time or effort or whatever had been wrapped up in the Matrix. I'm like, this is going to be the best. I can't wait. This is going to be amazing. And I saw X-Men 2. I'm like, holy shit, this is the greatest. And Matrix 2 was terrible. So hopefully Fantastic Four is good. I like to think that I've set my expectations so low that it has to be better than what I think it's going to be, but... I don't think so. Meanwhile, like X-Men Apocalypse, I have real, real, real high expectations for that one. You let me down, Singer, and I'll have your firstborn fucking... Well, okay. Bryan Singer probably won't have any firstborn children, but you know what I mean. So, anyways, thanks for listening to this edition of Five Star Radio on HalfGuarded.com, talking comic books and all that other good shit. We'll be back in a couple days with another podcast. Obviously, HalfGuarded.com's got tons and tons of content all the time, and it's really fucking good. And we're having more and more, you know, you notice it's not just the Mike Hoffman show. It's not just me and my brother. We have a lot of good writers, people doing quality work on a regular basis, be it, you know, Sean McGee and William Brown or Matt Grady, John Hathaway. I mean, this stuff is good. I'm blown away. People regularly contributing and doing very, very good work. Like, I always know, you know, I picked and asked these people to write for a reason. But I couldn't be happier with what I'm getting. And, if I wasn't involved in the website, I'd still tell you to look at it. But I am involved, so I really should tell you to look at it. So go to halfguarded.com right now. If you don't, you'll make me sad and disappointed. And you wouldn't like me when I'm sad. Or maybe you would. I don't know. But until next time, I am Mike Coughlin for 5-Star Radio at halfguarded.com, saying to one and all, love each other.
I was a 5-star man before the internet, and I'm damn sure a 5-star man now, okay? I just gotta drop the dead weight so I can shine.